On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Why would the Spurs sign De'Aaron Fox to a max deal this big right now? And how does Fox really fit alongside Victor Wembanyama? And can this duo finally get the Spurs back in the playoffs after a six-year drought? All this coming up right now. Welcome, 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 welcome to The Big Number. I'm Tom Haberstroh, and I'm reminding you that because, yes, the off-season beard is coming in strong, Dan. And yours, I think you had to get rid of yours months ago. It's looking great, too. That's Dan Devine. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Honest to goodness, Tom, I have heard multiple compliments of your facial hair from people who are not you, who have checked out the show and been like, Tom was pretty good with that. And I'm like, I agree. I've heard some people say, like, are you worried he's encroaching on your turf by growing facial hair? I was like, no, the more the merrier. We're going to be like a tag team here. We're going to double it up. This is going to be great. It's going to be better for everybody. A rising beard tide lifts all boats. But Tom, I know you just want to keep talking about our facial hair, but we simply cannot do it. We've got to keep it moving. I'm ready to put up some numbers. So Tom Haberstroh, hit me. What is our big number this week?
Well, my beard bro, we are going to get into this week's big number, and it's with the San Antonio Spurs. This week's big number is 5, as in that's how many games that De'Aaron Fox and Victor Wembanyama played together last season, and yet that is all it took for the San Antonio Spurs to say, you know what, max extension for you, De'Aaron Fox. Come on down. We did that big trade last year, only got 5 games with Wemby before he had to get sidelined with his blood clot. And that doesn't matter. All we saw all we needed to see. And he gets a 4-year max extension. According to ESPN, Shams Charania, 4 years, $229 million. That will take him through the 2029-2030 season. So even though, Dan, they barely overlapped last season, he was traded, and then Wemby was kind of a little fatigued, you know, after the fact when the news came out that he was suffering from a blood clot. Only got 5 games, Dan. Are you surprised by the news that we got earlier this week that De'Aaron Fox had signed a max extension, 30% of the cap, with the San Antonio Spurs going forward for the next 5 years?
I was not surprised for a couple of reasons. I mean, the number we will talk about, because the big number this week is 5, but the real big number is $229 million, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I'm not surprised because after the deal, when De'Aaron Fox, I think it was with Michael C. Wright of ESPN, he gave an interview where he was talking about the trade out of Sacramento and like the potential list of suitors. And the quote he gave was, quote, "There was no f-ing list. There was one team. I wanted to go to San Antonio." So I'm not surprised that Fox wanted to re-up. And then in terms of the Spurs giving up like multiple first round picks, multiple second round picks, I think all told, it was 4 firsts, but like one of them was a fake Charlotte first that turned into 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And the jewel of it might wind up being the Timberwolves unprotected 2031 first, but like multiple first round draft picks, multiple second round draft picks to be able to bring De'Aaron Fox in, even knowing he was going to be up for a deal. Like you kind of knew this was coming. I think the question was, were they going to go all the way with it to the full 4-year max? When they made the deal for him, they had not yet risen up in the 2025 NBA draft lottery to get the number 2 pick and the rights to draft Dylan Harper, another lefty point guard. So it was like, would that change their math at all? And evidently the answer was no. They knew, they felt clearly before they ever even got to see those 5 games in just 120 minutes of Wembanyama with Fox, like they feel pretty confident that he's their guy, and they've made an awfully big wager on him and a big outlay of money to keep him around to be Wemby's running buddy for the next half decade.
Yeah, this is kind of what you have to do now is when you acquire a star, you have to give up a lot of assets and players in order to get a star. And then you got to bring him in and sign him to an extension and try to keep him in uniform for as long as you can. And you're seeing this around the league is the gut tax. This is not about your gastrointestinal tract or anything like that. It's gutting your team or your assets in order to acquire an available superstar or star in the case of De'Aaron Fox. And look, Like, we only have so much to go off of here. It was a down year for De'Aaron Fox. Dan, like, it wasn't a good year. He was dealing with a finger issue that he had to, you know, it cut his season short. And apparently that had been plaguing him all season long and hampering him. And his three-point shot wasn't on mark. And I do think that De'Aaron Fox, you know, last year, his expected estimated plus minus, the all-in-one player value metric over at dunksandthrees.com, he was the 82nd best player or 83rd best player in the NBA last season. And that's not what you want if you're paying him 30% of the cap, a salary that will start at $49.6 million, which is going to be 30% of the cap. But if you look back the year before, he was a 22nd ranked player in the NBA and expected estimated plus minus. So a top 25 player. Yeah, you're going to give him a 30% max contract if he's in that range, if he's in the all-star and all NBA caliber range. And even though there's only five games of evidence that we have of Wemby and De'Aaron Fox, what we do know is players of that caliber, of De'Aaron Fox's caliber, they're not very available, right? So like, if you're the San Antonio Spurs and you're looking at the next few years, as Wemby is already a top 10 player in the NBA, and before he kind of had this little slump towards the end of his protracted season, he was a guy that was a top five player in that conversation, top five player on both ends of the floor. And we did a lot of coverage on Wemby last year. And I feel like De'Aaron Fox is not the best point guard fit next to Wemby, but you also have to consider how many of those elite point guards in the NBA can you go get? Like, can you go get a Tyrese Halliburton? Can you go get Jamal Murray? And what price tag is it going to get for you to acquire a guy like that? And so I don't love the fit between Wemby and De'Aaron Fox. I wish De'Aaron Fox was a better three-point shooter and wasn't so in love with the mid-range. But in terms of downhill scoring, pick and roll, transition score, I can see what the Spurs are seeing in that he is going to be that first great point guard for Victor Wembanyama. Hopefully he's healthier next season. And look, the numbers in the 120 minutes, we only have 120 minutes of action when they were on the floor together. According to Cleaning the Glass, their offensive rating when Wemby and De'Aaron Fox shared the court last season was 48th percentile, so about average. The defensive side of the ball was 24th percentile. Again, 24th percentile defensively, their defensive rating, not what you want to see. De'Aaron Fox is not an elite point guard, but you know what? Is Trae Young an elite point guard, defensive point guard? Is Jamal Murray an elite defensive point guard?
Like, no, I can definitively answer those questions. The answers are no.
But they're making De'Aaron Fox money next year. So De'Aaron Fox is going to be making $49 million. Jamal Murray is going to be making $50 million. And Trae Young's making $49 million next season once the extension kicks in. That's the comp. Like, is De'Aaron Fox in that tier of lead point guards, Jamal Murray, Tyrese Maxey, Tyrese Halliburton, Ja Morant, Trae Young? I think he's in that tier. Do I prefer Trae Young? I think I do. I think I like his passing on this roster and spraying to other shooters and Wemby, the fit between Wemby and Trae Young. I like it a little bit better, but I could also understand why a transition scorer like De'Aaron Fox is appealing to the San Antonio Spurs.
Absolutely. I mean, as you look at what kind of offensive weapons have been around Wembanyama's first two seasons, and I think the most comfortable fit we saw was last year with Chris Paul, obviously a very different kind of point guard than De'Aaron Fox is going to be. But, and so there's ways in which that might be a negative, where, like, obviously nobody's going to pull the strings in the pick and roll and manipulate and orchestrate in the way that Chris Paul can. And that's not De'Aaron Fox's game. What he is, though, is a significantly higher level penetrator, rim pressure generator, somebody who can actually get to his own shot and then draw attention, which then theoretically opens up more room for Wembanyama. And your point about the limited sample and the underwhelming numbers for the minutes where Fox and Wembanyama shared the floor, it made me think of a similar, not exactly the same, but similar situation a few years back. Remember, the trade that sent Tyrese Halliburton to Indiana and brought Domantas Sabonis to Sacramento, they only played together for 13 games, Fox and Sabonis, at that first season, that first like abbreviated run after the trade deadline. 13 games, Kings went 5-8. They were outscored in the 360 minutes those two guys played together, and their offensive rating was 116.9, like good but not elite. Then they get an offseason. They get a training camp. Mike Brown comes in and has his ideas for how he wants to sort of supercharge things. And the next season together, in the game that they played together, 43-28, plus 117 in more than 1,600 minutes, and an offensive rating of 123.8. So like,
yeah,
like 7 points per 100 higher. The Kings vault all the way up to number one offense in the NBA and make the playoffs. It is not a one for one. Obviously, Wembanyama is a different player than Sabonis. Wembanyama is a different player than anybody we've ever seen. Yeah. But that idea of it's pretty hard. Like, there's no substitute for time, for reps, for opportunities to develop chemistry in a two-man game. Like, a guard and a big have to play together. You've got to learn how that guy screens. Is he going to set hard, or is he always going to pop or slip? How often is he going to roll versus pop? You know, what kind of gravity does he have when he does pop? Like, Sabonis was never going to be a spacer, so he was always going to be living around the elbows, and the actions kind of always had to operate around there. Well, Wemby is a legit pop threat and a legit spacer out there that teams are going to have to guard. Is that going to give Fox just wider open driving lanes than he's ever had? If he's able to get downhill, suck in that defense, is Wembanyama going to be dealing with the easiest looks he's ever going to get? If he rolls more often, does he get more drop-off passes because they're having to play the cat and mouse game against the driving guard? Like, it's just a like, all of that is new for all of those guys to learn. They barely had any time to do it. And I think the Spurs bet here is with more reps, more opportunity, and a longer runway, there's a chance for a dramatic improvement on the offensive end of the floor where the Spurs really haven't been all that good for a while. And then with that, it's a rising tide that kind of lifts all boats, sort of like your beard, that puts us in a position to where the offense could really elevate the team to play in, maybe fringe playoff. Like, the Spurs are betting on, we pay Fox to professionalize this offense and everybody gets better around it. And all of a sudden we're contending.
Yeah, yeah. I think playoff is the right goal for this team. I think they can get into the top eight and potentially in the top six if De'Aaron Fox gets back to that level that he was a couple years ago. Look, he's healthier, right? We're hoping that that surgery is actually going to help him get back to that form from a couple years ago. And I said this earlier, but I think we need to really stress this. Victor Wembanyama was playing with what seems to be the ill effects of a blood clot in those last five games before he left right around the All-Star break. So, like, he wasn't 100% at that time. And so those two factors, injury factors or health factors, going in the other direction, we'll probably see a better combination, and those numbers will improve. Now, another thing here, I want to talk real quick about the Wemby window. The Wemby window is something that I figured out last year is like, when you got Victor Wembanyama, top five, top 10 player in the NBA, who's getting paid less than the mid-level exception, you have basically all of this cap space to play with before that second contract kicks in. So next year, Victor Wembanyama is going to be making like $12 million, and he's being, the production that he's giving you is like a $70 million player. So there's all of this economic rent or economic value that the Spurs are like, all right, when we got a player who's overplaying or overachieving his contract by $67 million, where do we go get that? Where do we go get a player to kind of fill in that cap room? And they found De'Aaron Fox, and he's going to make, you know, $50 million next season when his extension kicks in. But if you combine the salary with Victor Wembanyama, it's going to be $67 million, which is something that alone is what some players are going to be making alone. One player is going to be making next season. So if you look at it from that perspective, the first year of De'Aaron Fox extension, not this upcoming year, but the following season, they're going to be making $66 million combined. Jimmy Butler and Moses Moody in Golden State, $69 million combined. Anthony Davis and Caleb Martin, $68 million combined. Zach LaVine and Domantas Sabonis are going to be making $95 million combined, about $30 million more than what De'Aaron Fox and Victor Wembanyama are going to make in 2 years. So from that perspective, I understand why San Antonio is like, hey, we got to take advantage and capitalize on this Wemby window when he's making, you know, 20 cents on the dollar compared to what his actual value is on the open market. And so we'll see. We haven't talked about the guys behind him. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But with Dylan Harper and Steph Castle behind De'Aaron Fox, it's almost going to be like that Sacramento thing where De'Aaron Fox is going to be kind of the mentor for Tyrese Haliburton. But that ended where Tyrese Haliburton went to another team. They got Domantas Sabonis. We'll see how it plays out. We've got four little numbers here, Dan. Some four other thoughts about this De'Aaron Fox max extension with the San Antonio Spurs coming up right after the break. All right, Dan, this week's big number is five. It's the only games that we saw between De'Aaron Fox and Victor Wembanyama play together last year with the Spurs, and yet a max extension for De'Aaron Fox. You got four little numbers about this deal. Let's start with the first one. What you got?
This week's first little number is five, which is because I'm unoriginal and I wanted to copy off of your paper, but also because that's how many players have averaged at least 24 points and six assists per game on 47% or better shooting since the start of 2019-20. So we're talking about a six-year span, 24-6 over 47% shooting. Those players, Nikola Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Luka Doncic, LeBron James, and De'Aaron Fox. If you drop the sliders down, because I will admit, 24-6-47, kind of a thin slice of the old database there.
Yeah,
20-5 on 45% shooting. Whomst among us does not love round numbers? 20-5, 45% shooting. Still only 13 guys. The names that we just mentioned, plus people like Stephen Curry, Jimmy Butler, Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell. And I think that De'Aaron Fox keeping that kind of company, when you talk about production and consistency of production and efficiency in terms of scoring, might surprise a lot of people who didn't catch up with a lot of Kings games outside of the Light the Beam season. So especially when you consider what seems to me, and maybe you have seen something different, feels like it's been a pretty tepid response to the idea of paying De'Aaron Fox a 30% max out in the market and in the marketplace of ideas that is basketball internet. So, okay, I think we can safely say De'Aaron Fox, probably not like Joker Giannis level good.
Yeah.
But like, how good is he, Tom? And like, how good does he have to be to make this contract stand up?
I think he's got to be better than he was last season as a baseline. What we saw last year, and it was an injury-riddled season for him, and it was an awkward season having to start next to Chris Paul, and then you also got Steph Castle. There was kind of, it seemed like he wanted to go to San Antonio and knew that like next 4 years is really what this contract is all about, or this deal is all about. I feel like De'Aaron Fox is a top 50 player going forward for the next 4 years. I think in order to justify this contract, he's got to be at least an all-star season over the next 4 years with Victor Wembanyama. A lot of that is going to come with winning. Like, they can't be a 30-35 win team and expect De'Aaron Fox to get a second all-star bid alongside Victor Wembanyama. But Wemby's that good that I think as he ages, De'Aaron Fox will probably benefit from a lot of the halo effect of playing next to Wemby, and his numbers will look better just by virtue of having all that gravity and that attention to Wemby, who's this 7'8". Like, how tall is he now? I don't know, but like, De'Aaron Fox is a small guard who needs a guy like that and didn't really have it in Sabonis to cover up defensively and not have to have everything. Like, at his best, De'Aaron Fox is an above average defender, but he's not going to be able to do that and lead all of the point guard duties for this team and try to be a 25 point scorer. I think De'Aaron Fox is a really good elite point guard in today's NBA, up and down player, a guy that is very different from Chris Paul. Chris Paul is a guy that likes to slow things down and beat you methodically. De'Aaron Fox wants to get it and go. And then if he doesn't get it, and in transition, he's going to be able to probe, pull it back out, and start the offense with Wemby. Wemby is not your kind of like tailor-made pick and roll rim runner big man. And so I don't think De'Aaron Fox is a great lob threat or a lob passer in the same way that Chris Paul or the same way that Trae Young is, or Luka Doncic. But I don't think he needs to be that. I just think he needs to be an all-star caliber player. And Dan, I think he can do it if that finger feels better and he gets to be a better shooter than we saw last year.
Makes a ton of sense. I'm interested to see how having a different kind of threat to feed impacts Fox's floor game, his playmaking game. Because I think we think of him primarily as a, you know, going and getting his own. This could be an opportunity for him to really level up as a facilitator. But speaking of going and getting his own, brings us to our second little number this week. That is 15.2, which is how many drives to the basket Fox averaged per game last season, according to Second Spectrum Tracking. That's eighth most in the NBA. Fox has averaged 15 or more drives to the basket per game in each of the last six seasons and has finished in the top 10 in points per game off of drives in each of those six seasons. The Spurs haven't had somebody penetrate that often or that effectively since DeJounte Murray in 2021-22. So we're talking like 4 years since then. In fact, they haven't had anybody even average 10 drives to the basket per game in Wemby's first two seasons. For a couple of years ago, when Wemby was a rookie, it was Devin Vassell leading the team, just under 9 a game. Last season, Stephon Castle, 9.4 per game. So I'm wondering, what do you think introducing that sort of north-south element can do to the Spurs offense? And in particular, what does it do for Wemby's offense?
Yeah, I mean, if you're putting teams into a blender and getting those rotations and you have Wemby out on the perimeter or Wemby kind of sneaking into the dunker spot, like, what are you going to do with that guy? If the defense is stationary, Wemby's so much easier to guard. You know, he's not 7'8" anymore. He's just another dude. If there's no rotations, you're not putting anybody in a blender. And that's the hope with De'Aaron Fox, is like a lot of the Chris Paul actions last season wouldn't end up getting those skip passes that you would need to get kind of a downhill Wemby from the perimeter, or a mismatch for Wemby where, because of those rotations and those switches, you're going to get Wemby having a big mismatch underneath the basket, or at least get some space for a lob for Wemby. So I do like the aspect of a downhill guy in De'Aaron Fox. He's not an elite finisher around the rim. I would say... De'Aaron Fox is a poor man's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in this sense, that he's always going to get downhill, but he loves the mid-range in a sense where he likes to pull up in that, you know, 10, 15 foot area and get kind of this little like fadeaway jumper. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the best in the world at doing this, right? De'Aaron Fox isn't on that level, but even a poor man's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is probably a borderline all-star player. That's okay. De'Aaron Fox, I think, needs to get better at finishing at the cup, but getting downhill is so important in today's NBA. And in the same way that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander just cuts through the defense and then creates all of these rotations and swing, 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 and then suddenly Lu Dort has an open three, that's what you hope for Devin Vassell, or that's what you hope for Steph Castle or Dylan Harper, Harrison Barnes, Victor Wembanyama, and all of that, I think, is going to help kind of make others better around him.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's not like he won't be the level of like pinpoint passer that Chris Paul was, but the way he can bend the defense might create more open looks for those guys, or create more in-rhythm opportunities, even if like the pass might not be as perfect. Just you have a larger margin for error when you've drawn all that attention. So that'll be interesting to see. Also interesting to see our third little number here is 33, which is De'Aaron Fox's career three-point shooting percentage across eight pro seasons. According to StatHead's database, got 173 guards who've played at least 5,000 minutes and attempted 5 three-pointers per 36. 173 guards with that, you know, who've played that much and shot that much. Fox is 166th in three-point percentage. So that's not great. Your guys below him there on that list: Talen Horton-Tucker, Jordan Crawford, who else going to shoot? Vernon Maxwell, Baron Davis, Marcus Smart, White Chocolate, Jason Williams, and Jalen Suggs. Not exactly a murderer's row of three-point marksmen. Mm-hmm. That's not really where you want to be, especially when you're thinking about how do we space the floor around our generational gigantic guy. In fairness, there have been a couple of seasons where Fox has shot above league average, including two seasons ago when he shot just under 37% on nearly 8 attempts per game. So high volume, good accuracy. For the most part, though, been pretty hit or miss, literally, whether he's off the catch or off the pull. So for a Spurs team that doesn't have a ton of bankable shooting elsewhere either yet, and who's got, like, you know, Stephon Castle still a developing marksman, Dylan Harper not a great shooter at Rutgers, there's still a lot of guys that got to develop. Does making that big a commitment to somebody who's not that great a shooter give you some pause about the deal?
It does. It does. And we already made the comp earlier about Trae Young. He's like, would you rather have Trae Young on this team? But he's also an overrated, I would say, three-point shooter, career 35%. Yes. De'Aaron Fox at 33%. But he's 35% in your mind. Trae Young, it feels like he should be at 38% three-point shooter. And because he has those logo threes, you feel like he's a better shooter than he is. 2 years ago, Trae Young was at 37%. A few years even before that, 38%. Similar numbers in terms of, like, at peak, he's a really good three-point shooter and has deeper range than De'Aaron Fox. But like we talked about with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, like, you can be an elite point guard in today's NBA without being a top shelf three-point shooter. But the margins are so much thinner for a guy like De'Aaron Fox, who's not a Trae Young caliber playmaker. And I would say, in terms of defensively, I would say De'Aaron Fox is closer to SGA than he is Trae Young, but still not an elite defender. So would I'm not excited about the three-point shot benefits of playing next to Wembanyama. That's like, I'm kind of tepid, like you said earlier about it. But I think you're getting De'Aaron Fox because he's a downhill scorer. And hopefully he can add some better three-point shooting efficiency. But to me, getting the team, the defense in a blender is way more important for this team than, say, in a pick and roll, a high pick and roll, whether the defender is going under or over you, because I think the attention with Wemby is going to be paramount to what you're seeing with De'Aaron Fox. How effective is that pick and roll action? Well, I think it's all the attention to that 7'8" guy.
I love that we're just stamping 7'8" as legit. I love that.
We're just, like, making numbers bigger. That's what we're doing on this show. Like, you think he's 7'3", but we're just going to keep going. By the end of it, who knows? 8 feet. We'll see.
I love that. Just like Luka's 42-inch vertical leap. You know, it's, you know, once we start to say things enough, and then it winds up being true. For what it's worth, the only Spurs returning from last year's roster who shot league average or better from three: Harrison Barnes, Devin Vassell, and Julian Champagne. We got to make sure we shout out Julian Champagne on all shows at all times. And your point about the under potential, you know, defender ducking under on the pick and roll. Trae Young, like you said, not an elite accuracy, but what matters is, do they believe that you're going to shoot it from there, and are they worried about it? It's that, that idea of, like, do you have the gravity that they're scared of you out there, and will the defense react accordingly? What does that open up? That's the sort of the next tier for De'Aaron Fox to be able to unlock in his game. He's had it at times. It would be interesting to see it happen again. Our fourth and final little number this week is 6. That's how many years it's been since the Spurs made the playoffs. They lost to the Nuggets in the first round in 2019, 7-game series. In my memory, there was a Derek White game way back in the day. That is by far the longest postseason drought in San Antonio Spurs franchise history. And this kind of surprised me when I was looking it up. It's the second longest drought in the NBA, behind only the Charlotte Hornets at 9 seasons.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think, and it's funny enough, because what was the gold standard, or I guess, I don't know, the pewter standard, it's a tarnished metal, the dirty bronze standard of playoff droughts was Sacramento Kings. And then a couple of years ago, De'Aaron Fox goes bonkers, wins clutch player of the year, you know, makes all NBA. They make the playoffs, break that drought. The second most longest one now is the San Antonio Spurs. So you mentioned earlier, by any number of advanced metrics, by your eye test, whatever, Victor Wembanyama, a top 10, arguable top 5 when healthy and at his full power caliber player in the NBA already. When you asked me, what did the Fox deal make me think? The deal and then the subsequent extension made me think, this is like a move you make because you realize it's important enough to get that guy into real games that matter right now. And does that strike you, Tom, as maybe moving a little too fast, or like a worthwhile expense? Yes, we'll deal with the downside risk later. Yes, we'll deal with our crowded backcourt later. But let's do what we can right now to get this guy into games of consequence. Reasonable, or maybe a bit overambitious for the Spurs?
I love the idea. I love the strategy, especially in today's NBA, where their major injuries happen a lot more than what you expect, given in the 90s and early 2000s. That can kind of reset your franchise and scramble your future plans. I do think that when you have a player this good in Victor Wembanyama, you got to strike while the iron's hot. Like, planning 5-10 years down the road, yes, you have to have the long term in mind. They're signing to an extension a 27-year-old in De'Aaron Fox, not a 37-year-old right. Damian Lillard or Chris Paul to a max extension, right? So, like, this is a guy that can be really good for them right now and really good for them 3-4 years down the line. And I do think that I'm very much in the land of pouncing while you have a franchise player that is not just going to be great 5 years from now, but great right now. Victor Wembanyama's elite, great MVP candidate right now. And so if you're going to be, you know, trying to plan 5 years, fine. But don't wait, because you never know if that whole window, that championship window, is going to open. And I do think that when you talk about historically, Tom Ziller did a great piece this week on Good Morning, It's Basketball, when he wrote out, like, there really isn't a great comp for what we're seeing a year three guy in Victor Wembanyama having a co-pilot like De'Aaron Fox, who is a one-time All-NBA player, one-time All-Star. But in terms of accelerating the timeline, you only do it for the guys like LeBron and Luka and Victor Wembanyama, guys who are already in their second year, have already catapulted themselves into the elite inner circle of the league. And I do think, Dan, this is fun. It's exciting. And I think as a fan of the NBA, it makes me much more excited about this upcoming season to see what Victor Wembanyama is with great talent next to him. Because I think so much of the NBA is like, all right, let's just kick the can down the road, play the sustainability game. LeBron James in his first 7 years with the Cavs, I kind of feel like we were all waiting for the Cavs to, like, put a guy who was next to LeBron James, who was worthy of being next to LeBron James, an all-star. And they ended up with, like, a little too late, Mo Williams and Antoine Jameson. And I love Zydrunas Ilgauskas here. But, like, I'm a big Z fan club. Like, I'm in on that exec board. However, I do think that the Cavs slow played the LeBron era way too much. And I think that's the reason why he decided to leave and go to Miami.
And the question that's going to, I mean, maybe it's a $229 million question, is like, is De'Aaron Fox a player commensurate with this kind of gamble, right? Or maybe not even gamble, but this kind of wager, this idea that, like, we're putting him next to Wembanyama because we think he can elevate and accelerate the timetable for our franchise. On that,
it just entered my thought. If Nico Harrison decided to open up the trade talks instead of just sending him to LA, the Luka Doncic and Victor Wembanyama, like, I don't think Nico has a ready player to win now, like Anthony Davis on the Spurs roster. But, like, that's something that is possible, right? To think that, like, maybe the Spurs could have had Luka Doncic was on the trade block last year, man. And, like, Wemby could have played with that guy, or Jokic could have played with that guy. Sorry for the side rant.
It's all right. But you know what? That guy's not on the trade block anymore. And in fact, he's not going anywhere anytime soon, Tom, which maybe we can get into.
Yeah, let's get into it. In our final segment here, we're going to talk about some other extensions and deals around the league. George Niang. We're going to talk George Niang here because that's what you've been waiting for here in the beginning of August in the calendar of the NBA. We're going to talk about Mikal Bridges, Luka Doncic, and the Chris Boucher, George Niang deal for the Boston Celtics right after the break. Luka Doncic is going to be on Hot Ones. That was the big reveal that I got from reading Dan Wojcicki over at the Athletic. Luka Doncic is, you know, doing this whole, like, national tour with Jordan Brand, stopped in New York, and actually taped with Sean Evans, the Hot Ones, the interview show on YouTube, which I'm obsessed with. The list of guys who have been on this show from the NBA, it's like Embiid, Kevin Durant, Blake Griffin, LeBron has not been on it. LeBron also wasn't at Luka's press conference. That's neither here nor there. But I kind of feel like Luka Doncic eating hot wings and answering questions about his life and his career, I'm all in. I think the number one pick that I would have, Dan, is Anthony Edwards. I would love to see Anthony Edwards on an interview show where he's eating increasingly hot wings. He's from the A, so I kind of feel like he's already had some hot wings before. That's just me talking. I don't know if there's any. Maybe George Niang would be good on that show. But I do think that Luka Doncic on Hot Ones is a big reveal from Dan Wojcicki's TikTok, his little like his story of the lead up to Luka Doncic signing the extension. 3 years, a lot of money for Luka Doncic, but really it's all about the 10-year service maximum extension that he's going to line himself up with. He's skinny Luka. I'm excited about Hot Ones. I'm excited to see what skinny Luka does. And I'm just wondering, are you cool with the FaceTime from LeBron James? This is what people need to know. Dan, are you satisfied by LeBron James not showing up to the press conference, playing golf instead, and actually just going with a FaceTime? Are you cool with that?
I mean, I'm personally fine with it. I don't feel insulted by it. If I re-up,
put it on a headline, not insulted. Yeah. By LeBron's decision to not be at the press conference.
Sources, divine okay. Which honestly, there's been many, many times in my life that headline would not have been reasonable. But I think the only way to find out, Tom, is when I re-up with Yahoo on a 3-year, $165 million contract, what will you do? If you FaceTime me, will I feel some type of way? Will you make a point of coming here to Brooklyn for me to see me sign it? I guess we'll have to find out. But the important part is, Yahoo, I'm going to need that 3-year, $165 million extension. That's really what this comes down to.
Yeah, that's really
and
what
the
segment.
And the hot wings.
And also maybe NSYNC at the Sphere. What do you want to do? Like what 90s band would I take you to? Because that's part of the story too, is that Jeannie Buss and the Lakers got Luka Doncic kind of a suite over at the Backstreet Boys performance at the Sphere. So what is it, Dan Devine? Not just the contract, but what would you like me and Yahoo to get you tickets for at the Sphere?
I mean,
to satiate your like 90s nostalgia.
My 90s nostalgia. I don't know. Like if Everclear only plays one record, maybe them. I don't know. Yeah, I'm like who would be a lot of my heroes from that time period are no longer around or are really sad and would be really tough to play in the Sphere. So I don't know. Yeah, honestly, set me up to one of the boy band groups and like I'll wear all white. We'll keep the wings away from it so I don't get any sauce stains on the all white garments. It'll be like a Michael Rubin party out in the desert for us to celebrate. So, but you know, Luka's one celebration. Anybody else from any other big market sign any extensions this week, Tom?
Yes, one that is rumored with the LeBron James next tour. The New York Knicks, Mikal Bridges signed a four. We got to just keep, you know, we didn't say enough about LeBron in the first couple segments of the show. So we gotta keep that name.
You can
up.
See people's eyes going, wait a second.
LeBron, what? What? The Knicks signed Mikal Bridges to a 4-year, $150 million extension, which works out to about $38 million a year in average salary. It's a big deal. It's one that was kind of expected. If Jalen Brunson was going to take a pay cut, someone's going to get that money or benefit from getting that money. And it's his Villanova buddy, Mikal Bridges. Same thing with De'Aaron Fox. I think an underwhelming season last year, but does kind of keep some stability with the New York Knicks and with all of the stars in at the top of the East, either hurt or the teams are being decimated a little bit in the East. The Knicks have a lot of stability there with this deal.
Yeah. I mean, it essentially locks in that top six, Jalen Brunson, Karl Anthony Towns, OG Anunoby, Bridges, Josh Hart, and Deuce McBride. For the next two seasons. Like those guys are all going to be fully guaranteed for the next two seasons. Cat also extension eligible, can go the year after that. He's got a player option, I believe, for the third season there. Remains to be seen. Like, oh, there's some other business that the Knicks can do. Deuce McBride extension eligible, Mitchell Robinson. That'll be interesting because we saw the level of impact he made during the postseason, but also he's missed so much time with injuries. So like, is there a sweet spot they can get to that pays him for that impact, but also covers the Knicks in terms of his availability? You know, that'll be interesting to see what the negotiations look like for that. But they've, you know, in addition to the depth moves they've made in the offseason, adding Jordan Clarkson, adding Gershon Yabusele, like they've got that top of the roster secured for the next couple of years. And the option, sort of optionality that they retain with it, the idea, like, there's still some flexibility. Obviously, all this comes as like the fruit of Jalen Brunson signing the extension last summer, right? Agreeing to take the maximum he could have made last offseason rather than waiting to get like a proper max this offseason. And because Brunson's on essentially like a similar kind of, you know, four-year 156, like a similar kind of deal, it allows him and Bridges to combine to take up, you know, whatever, 42-43% of the salary cap for the next couple of years. And that creates the opportunities for everything else, the OG deal, the Towns trade, all that kind of stuff. So Bridges didn't take a big, his max, the maximum he could have made was $156 million. $150 million is like a slight haircut on that, but that still like offers some flexibility below the second apron. And is there more that Leon Rose can do? And I think the thing that'll be worth watching, or at least it'll be talked about and brought up. Remember last offseason when Lauri Markkanen waited to sign his extension until it was like after the 6-month period before the trade deadline? Like, one day after I would be eligible to be traded, I sign it. So now you can't trade me this season. Mikal Bridges signed his before that deadline, so he will be eligible to be rerouted before February 6th if need be. Yeah, now why would they do that? Right, I see your windy fingers over there. Everyone's going to keep their eyes on Milwaukee. Everybody's going to keep their eyes on, you know, whatever, who the next star is. It's a monitoring closely season. We're all monitoring closely what's coming down the pike next. The Knicks, this way, they lock in their core and they also give themselves an opportunity for one more big swing if one's available. But a lot of it is going to ride on, can Mikal Bridges improve on last season? Can Mike Brown get him more comfortable, find more ways to maximize him on offense, maybe move him off the point of attack a little bit more to make him more of a steals and deflections kind of threat? But yeah, like, similar, I love that you connected it to the Fox deal. Like, a lot of this is, where's your valuation on the player? If you think he's a top 80 player, then that's a lot of money. If you think he's closer to a top 50 player, you can make your peace with it and then see where you are moving forward. The Knicks clearly are on the higher end of that, and so they get the deal done.
A team that said peace to a homegrown or a homecoming, potential homecoming, George Niang, New Englander, coming home to Boston, shipping up to Boston already in a trade this summer. And the minivan was going to park his car in Habayad. Not happening. I feel bad for George Niang. Like, he was going to come home to Boston, and then he just got shipped out to Utah in a deal for 2 second-round picks, essentially a salary dump, and then the Boston Celtics brought in Chris Boucher, the former Toronto Raptor, NBA champion Chris Boucher, to basically be their starting power forward slash center. Like, I don't know what is on the Celtics roster that he's going to be competing with. Xavier Tillman, maybe, starting center for the Boston Celtics next year, now that Luke Kornet and it seems Al Horford going to the Golden State Warriors. This trade, I just wanted to say, we're not going to be doing this thing where we're like cheering for billionaires to save money.
Agreed.
But this deal, like, hey, this is a great deal for the Celtics because it's shaved $34 million or about $35 million in tax penalties. Like, fans shouldn't care about this. I don't think it's worth spending more time on the whole like tax savings aspect of it. Just want to put this note in there. The Celtics, according to Bobby Marks, have cut their payroll, their total payroll, from $540 million this offseason to $239. So that is $300 million that the bosses, the billionaires over in Boston, do not have to pay. But at the same time, that's not going to be fun for the fans to watch, as a team that is going to be gutted to the point where we're going to like do like laps of the victory laps on how much money they saved. And I don't know what's going to happen with Anthony Simons. I don't know what their starting five looks like, but damn, we are not going to get the minivan in Boston coming home this summer, traded again, but this time going back home to Utah, where he spent a bunch of years of his career.
I was going to say, yeah, it's a different sort of homecoming. You know, he goes back to Utah, where, you know, George kind of broke into the national consciousness a little bit before taking the circuitous route around the NBA, as a lot of, like, you know, veterans of a certain tier do. You end up with more, you know, as many years teams played for as years in the league, almost, or close to it. And he's approaching
the Ish Smith Award. Yep.
Yeah. the God Ish Smith. He's approaching that kind of, you know, Ish Smith line. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to do this, if you're going to have to because of the injuries, injury to Jason Tatum just, blows up your contending window, or because management's saying or ownership is saying we got to reduce salary, or both, you know, if you're going to do it as quickly as possible and put yourself in position to, when you do have that number one star back, maybe you're out, you know, you've reduced some of the limitations that in terms of roster management that being in the apron can impose on you. So you put yourself in position to maybe reload quickly. The Celtics are now in a spot where like the only real serious money that they'll have after this season on the books is for Tatum, Brown, and Derek White. That puts them in position to maybe be able to pivot quickly there. And then I think whatever you would, you know, the next line to look at is like the Celtics getting all the way out of the tax so that they can actually get luxury tax money in. So, you know, maybe keep your eyes on your phone, Anthony Simons and Sam Hauser. We'll have to see where that looks from there. But Chris Boucher is a fun dude who wound up going from like the absolute fringes of the NBA to like an NBA champion and a like sixth man of the year contender, like one of the more unlikely success stories in NBA history. Now he goes and gets a chance to maybe earn one more big, like reasonably sized deal if he has a big year in Boston. You know, opportunities abound. You know, when things go badly for a team, it opens up some doors for other people. So maybe he gets the chance to be, you know, get back to that like stretch floor spacing, shot blocking, put up some numbers, get one more big deal out of it. And, you know, everybody's happy.
Do you think that, speaking of happy, do you think that George Niang would be happy if the Celtics are like, all right, we can't bring you back home to Boston, but we will, off the books, take you to a new Kids on the Block at the Sphere when they go?
Speaking of Boston faithful, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Mark and the Funky Bunch, maybe. Maybe he can go backstage with Mark Wahlberg. Who knows? The potential is there that they can satiate or soothe the wounds, the deep emotional wounds that he's not going to be able to come home to Boston. Maybe they just take him to the new Kids on the Block at the Sphere.
I mean, there's worse, sort of like door prizes to get. But yeah, I guess the main thing is just keep that off the books and keep it quiet. You know, you don't want to run afoul of the league for cap circumvention based on, related to Wahlberg's. You don't want
forget
that.
This segment ever happened.
Exactly.
You know?
Let's delete it all from memory.
Let's delete it all. So you didn't hear it here first. When you see in 5 years George Niang in the Celtics booth at the New Kids on the Block, keep your third eye open on that. All right. That's going to do it for us today. We're going to be off next week because we're taking a little hiatus here, a summer hiatus. But I want to thank Emmy and Dakota and the entire squad that works behind the scenes on this podcast. Please watch The Big Number on YouTube. Yes, we're on YouTube as well as wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe, rate, review, give us 5 stars. And if I can steal a line from our friend Bomani Jones, if you do not give me a 5-star rating, I will consider you a hater. All right. We'll be back next week. Nope. The following week. We'll be back soon with another episode of The Big Number. Until then, have some fun out there and make sure you wear a hat out there and protecting your beautiful dome. I do it even indoors this summer. We'll see what my beard looks like when we get back on the air. Damn. Fingers crossed that I'm James Harden. All right. Peace.